Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We all jump to conclusions about people, right? But have you ever stopped to think that maybe those snap judgments tell us more about ourselves than the person we're, you know, sizing up? You know, we've been on quite a journey through unraveling the fabric of fear, looking at everything from the present moment to ego, even jealousy.
Yeah, quite the path.
And now, chapter 6, unconditional compassion, the truest love.
A really pivotal chapter.
Feels significant, doesn't it? Especially because love, well, it's such a loaded word, means so many different things.
It really does. Huge weight, lots of different flavors to how we experience it. And that's exactly what this deep dive into chapter 6 is about.
This chapter has some really potent insights.
Mm.
It can genuinely shift how you see relationships and even your own internal landscape. You know, what struck me is how it starts by just listing all those different kinds of love before it even gets to compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So the chapter starts laying down some definition, which is important, right? Getting the terms clear.
Okay, so love. The chapter kicks off saying we use this word for, well, everything. It's kind of all over the place.
Totally. Like, you love your partner, you love pizza, you love that feeling of, you know, excitement. The book lists infatuation, astonishment.
Sex, fondness.
Lust, even sarcastic fascination.
Right. It really makes you stop and think about how much we pack into that one little word, love.
Forces you to consider that whole spectrum before it zooms in.
So the chapter wants to pin down unconditional compassion and call that the truest love.
Then it gives us its definition of compassion. Empathic sympathy.
Or another way it puts it is emotionally informed understanding. Okay, let's break that down. Empathy. That's feeling with someone, right? Really connecting emotionally.
Exactly. Like, you almost absorb their feeling. The book describes it as really feeling their emotions.
That gut reaction you get sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So quite intense then.
It can be, yeah. The book sort of hints that it can even be overwhelming, feeling someone else's pain that directly.
Okay. And sympathy.
Sympathy is more about understanding. You get why someone feels the way they do. You understand their situation. But you're not necessarily feeling the same emotion yourself. There's a bit more distance.
Right. So if my friend is really devastated, empathy is like, I feel some of that devastation too. Sympathy is, I understand why they're devastated and I care, but I'm not necessarily feeling it myself.
Precisely.
Okay.
So empathic sympathy kind of blends them. It's suggesting this deeper understanding that comes from both feeling that connection and grasping the situation.
Hmm.
And that understanding is what leads to compassionate action, according to the chapter. A selfless care.
Selfless care.
Or emotionally informed understanding.
True compassion isn't about just, you know, letting everything slide.
Right. It's more about examining the beliefs behind actions without condemning the person holding those beliefs. So you take the feeling from empathy, the understanding from sympathy, and it guides you towards helpful, selfless action. Critically, considering the well-being of everyone involved now and, you know, down the line.
What's actually best here in the bigger picture? Like that saying, give a person a fish or teach them to fish, that kind of longer term thinking.
Exactly that. And this leads to a pretty important point the book makes.
Mm-hmm.
While most of us feel compassion sometimes, achieving perfect compassion is probably impossible.
Impossible? Why is that?
Well, because perfect compassion would mean perfectly understanding all the consequences of any action.
Ah, okay.
Think about, like, the butterfly effect. Every tiny action ripples outwards in ways we just can't predict fully. Perfect knowledge of all those ripples.
Yeah.
Just not feasible for us.
So we aim for it. We try to understand more, learn more. So our choices become more compassionate, even if perfect foresight isn't on the table.
That's the idea. Keep learning. Keep broadening your understanding. Make the best, most informed, most compassionate choices you can with what you know.
Okay. But then this leads to the question of conditional versus unconditional compassion. What's the distinction the book draws there?
So conditional compassion, the book suggests, often comes from a place of, well, self-love, really,
mm-hmm.
or maybe self-interest. We show care or love because the other person fulfills some need or desire we have.
Like, they make us feel good or accepted or they fit into the life we want.
Right. There are conditions. I care about you if you do this or as long as you are that. And if the conditions aren't met, poof, the feeling can just, you know, evaporate.
Yeah, that as long as it is the key. And that relates to expectations too, I imagine.
Absolutely. The chapter points out that if you constantly need someone to change, are you loving them? Or are you loving your idea of them?
Ooh, that's a challenging thought. Loving the potential you see, perhaps, rather than the reality right now.
Which suggests it's not quite unconditional, is it? It's love with conditions. Mm. The condition being they need to fit your mold.
But yeah. Unconditional is different.
Totally different. It's selfless care. No expectation of getting something back. And this ties into free will. The source emphasizes that true love has to respect the other person's free will.
Meaning you can't demand love back.
Right. Demanding it makes it conditional. It turns it into a transaction. I love you, so you must love me back.
That's not really love then. It's an obligation or control.
More like control.
So why aim for unconditional compassion? If there are no conditions, where's the game for us?
Well, the sources argue the need for a personal gain is the condition you need to drop. The real gain, if you want to call it that, operates at the level of cause and effect. Hate breeds hate. Compassion tends to breed compassion. And this ties into the idea of interconnectedness again, that all events are just results of countless prior causes.
Right. And if you really grasp that, the chapter suggests holding onto resentment, focusing just on what happened, starts to feel a bit pointless.
Because it isolates one event from that huge web of causes.
Yeah. Resentment fixates on the what. Compassion, it argues, tries to understand the why, the factors, the conditions, the chain of events that led to it.
So it's understanding versus judgment, in a way.
In a sense. And by seeking understanding, by maybe choosing the path of least resistance in terms of conflict, the chapter implies we can collectively improve. We allow space for more understanding, more compassion to grow.
Now, for the part that might feel, I don't know, a bit upside down, this idea that compassion means judging the ideas, not the people. Why draw that line?
Well, the book makes a really compelling case here. It argues that individuals aren't born with inherent flaws or, you know, badness.
Okay. So where does problematic behavior come from then?
It suggests their behavior and thinking are largely a result of their experiences. What the book refers to as their conditioning. Life shapes them.
Ah, okay. So when we see actions that seem hurtful or, well, uncompassionate, the book's saying it stems from learned beliefs and concepts.
Rather than some fundamental flaw in that person's core. Yes, precisely. The core of the individual isn't seen as the problem. It's the disharmonious or uncompassionate thought patterns they've picked up along the way.
But wait, the obvious question then is, where do those ideas come from? Don't they come from people? It feels a little like we're chasing our tail here.
It can seem that way. But the book doesn't quite see it like that. It proposes that humans are actually sort of predisposed towards empathy.
Really? Predisposed?
Yeah, and that we're all in this continuous, ongoing process of learning how to achieve a state of compassionate harmony, even if that process is, let's be honest, often pretty messy.
Like societal evolution, maybe. How our understanding of things changes over time.
Exactly. That's a great example of this untidy learning process, as the book calls it. We're collectively figuring things out.
Now, let's bring this home to you, our listener. How does this whole idea, judging ideas, not people, relate to our own emotional landscape?
Well, the preface of the book talks about our emotional energy existing on a spectrum.
A spectrum.
Even brings in a principle from physics.
Ah, I remember this. The law of conservation of energy.
Energy isn't created or destroyed. It just gets transferred or transformed. And the book applies this to our emotions.
Energy being released.
Our emotions are the form of energy moving through us and out into the world. And this leads to some really potent questions for you to reflect on.
Okay, lay them on us.
What kind of energy are you releasing? Are you mainly just reflecting the energy, the emotions you pick up from around you, like an emotional mirror?
Sure.
Or are you actively working to convert or translate that energy, transforming it somehow?
Wow. That's a powerful frame. So if we're constantly judging people, condemning individuals, are we essentially putting out fear-based energy, contributing to more negativity?
That's exactly the implication the book draws. Judging others comes from fear, doesn't it? Fear of difference, fear of being threatened. Releasing that judgmental energy just fuels that cycle.
Or is focusing on the ideas.
Opens up the potential to shift that energy, to move towards understanding, evaluation, and ultimately compassion. It gives us a chance to maybe transmute that raw reaction into something more constructive.
You know, this really reminds me of that core principle from another source you shared, that Buddhist teaching in Living in the Now.
Ah, yes. The idea that hatred doesn't cease by hatred.
By love. By, in this context, compassion.
It aligns perfectly with this idea of consciously choosing to transmute that negative energy rather than just reflecting it back.
When things get tough, the only real alternative to reacting with hate are apathy or compassion.
And here's the link back to self-worth.
Exactly. If you can find your self-worth internally, without relying on external approval or social value,
you're free.
You're free from needing others to meet your conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a genuine choice in how you interact. You could avoid others out of fear. You could use them out of apathy, which the sources warn borders on psychopathic thinking.
Oh.
Though the material does add a note. If you're avoiding or using people but not seeking any external approval at all, that might signal depression, which is different. Or you can choose to offer unconditional compassion, rooted in that curiosity we keep coming back to.
So the core message is, drop the conditions on compassion. Extend it equally to everyone, including yourself.
Yes. And doing that helps reduce that reliance on social validation for feeling okay about yourself, which in turn can lessen things like jealousy and envy stuff we talked about in the chapter on social value.
Makes sense. Yeah. Okay, now you mentioned earlier the chapter starts by referencing some religious perspectives.
These ideas were being explored and valued, you know, centuries ago, often through spiritual leaders or theological thinking, long before we had formal psychology labs. It shows a kind of continuity of human understanding about these core ethical concepts.
So it's acknowledging that wisdom about compassion exists outside of or maybe predates the scientific method we rely on now.
Exactly. And the chapter highlights specific examples that really echo its own definitions of compassion, that selfless care, that emotionally informed understanding.
Like what? What examples does it use?
Well, it mentions Christianity, pointing to verses that emphasize kindness, compassion, sympathy, loving one another. There's even a mention of love overlooking offenses, which you could see as a sort of early take on unconditional acceptance. Then there's Buddhism, with the concept of metta-loving kindness and the importance of compassion for all beings. It quotes the Dalai Lama on empathy being precious. Hinduism, too, verses from the Bhagavad Gita about friendliness, compassion, seeing all beings equally. And this beautiful idea from the Mahopanishad about the whole world being one family.
Wow, that's a powerful image for interconnectedness.
Isn't it? And it even gives a nod to other traditions like the Emerald Tablets talking about love being the beginning and end of the heart, which again ties into that selfless giving idea. It's fascinating how these core ideas, selfless care, interconnectedness, echo through so many different religious and spiritual traditions, offering these long-standing insights into being human.
Yeah, it's compelling how both the book's sort of psychological approach and these ancient wisdom traditions seem to converge on just how vital this quality is. Cultivating unconditional compassion, it seems fundamental.
So bringing this all together, this deep dive into chapter 6 really hammers home that compassion, which the book calls the truest form of love, isn't about being passive or just accepting everything.
Not at all. It's about being discerning. And it's distinct from conditional love that's about personal gain or needs being met. It's about carefully evaluating the ideas, the beliefs, the thought patterns that drive actions,
rather than just condemning the individuals caught up in those patterns.
Precisely. And as you go about your day, maybe keep those questions in mind.
The energy questions.
Yeah. What energy are you releasing? Are you mostly an energy reflector, just bouncing back what comes at you? Or are you trying to be an energy converter, actively transmuting it towards understanding, towards compassion?
Really powerful questions to sit with.
They really are.
Remember, judge thoughts, not people. See you in Chapter 7, The Illusion of Adulthood.